From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hallelujah, brethren, and welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. We are back here in the Midnight Movie Man Cave in Dallas, Texas.
Look how hot that's going
on. It is very hot. Silence, Brother Stu. Do not speak unless you are spoken to. All right, now. I am here with Mr. Stuart Balk in the Midnight Movie Man Cave, and we have just watched a fine documentary. Testify, Brother Stuart.
We watched one called Beware of Mr. Baker, Ginger Baker.
Hallelujah, brethren, it was about Ginger Baker, the famous drummer from such bands as Cream and...
Blind Faith.
Yeah. And many other such projects that lasted 5 days before they imploded due to Ginger Rage.
Yeah.
Ginger Baker, the leader of the Ginger Separatist Movement. Anyway, on with the show.
Yeah,
it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. And Stuart, I was at work yesterday, and Stuart texted me, and he goes, have you seen Beware of Mr. Baker? And I said, I've heard of it, and I've heard it's good. And Stuart said, I just watched 5 minutes. I'm shutting it off. We're going to do a show on it.
Yeah.
And I said, hallelujah, Brother Stuart! and so we just watched it. It was very good, and I immediately said to Stu, I said, this would make a great double bill with Whiplash for an Assholes Who Play Drums show.
Yeah.
But so what's your background like? When you saw this documentary, were you like, ooh, I like Cream, I like Ginger, but why'd you just pick it out?
Well, Dad had all these albums in his collection when I was a kid. He had Ginger Baker's Air Force, remember, he had Blind Faith, and I think he ate Cream. Sure, I knew of him, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was well familiar with him. And
I always knew him as the ugly member of Cream.
Yeah. Boy, you get some ugly shots of him in his fucking show, don't you?
Oh, you get him at his high highs and his low lows.
Yeah, you have to understand when you watch this, he's insane.
Mm.
He's clinically insane.
Well, the movie opens with him hitting the guy making the documentary in the face with a cane. So that sets the tone for it.
Yeah.
He swats him in the face with a cane and makes him
right
bleed.
Across the bridge of his nose.
But the background for it is this guy met Ginger Baker, and he did an article on him for Rolling Stone, and I guess he decided he wanted to do a documentary on him. He got Ginger to agree.
Yeah.
So they went to his compound in South Africa.
Yeah.
And they made this documentary, and they interview Ginger's associates, family members, his
ex-wives.
Cavalcade of ex-wives.
Yeah.
And
and much to his dismay, he doesn't want any of them interviewed, which is what...
No, in fact, he hits the documentarian across the nose when he discovers that he's going to go interview other people in his life who are going to talk about him in the film.
Yeah, he absolutely loses his shit.
Yeah, he goes, the hell you are, thwack, yeah. You know?
No, you're fucking not.
No, you're not. I'll send you to hospital.
But, so Ginger Baker, probably not spoken in the same sort of tongue as John Bonham and...
Keith Moon.
Neil Peart. And they all, obviously Bonham and Moon can't speak because, due to death, they're unavailable for
well,
this documentary.
Well, and people like them often... They often, I think, get kind of deified. It's like Lemmy said about Randy Rhoads. He goes, I've never seen a really good guitar player go to being a fucking great guitar player the way Randy Rhoads did when he died. You know,
that's right.
Like, a lot of times these really exceptional players, they become, gods once they perish too soon.
Yeah, same with Jimi Hendrix. I always thought Jimi Hendrix was overrated. I always said he was like a poor man's Clapton.
Well, Hendrix was he was very, when I watch the Live at Monterey thing, I'm like, whoa, that's really cool. But Hendrix wasn't – I think he was around long enough to influence a bunch of people.
He was, but that whole sort of ilk, with the Jim Morrison. I mean, Jim Morrison was just I have no real time for Jim.
You know, Morrison. I've always preferred Ian Astbury myself.
Well, yeah, that's right. The Doors are only ever good with Ian Astbury. Right?
Yeah. Like I've always said, the Cult are like the Doors without all the bullshit. You know?
Yeah, yeah. With all the mysticism.
You got the drugs. Well, you got the Indian stuff. You got all that, but it's not wrapped in this like poet prophet shit. You know?
Yeah. But. Have you ever heard of Ginger Baker before this?
I'd heard of him. I only ever owned one Cream record, Disraeli Gears.
Right.
Never listened to any of his other projects, really.
Yeah.
But I was aware of him, but I wasn't like, I couldn't say I was like a fan or I followed him or anything.
Yeah.
And this documentary sort of showed me how, I was like, oh, because, you know, whenever you hear these old rock dog drummers like him or Bill Ward or whoever talk about playing drums, Bill Ward's a favorite of mine. His new album, not so good, though.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you hear them talk about stuff, they always talk about the big band and the jazz drumming, and you can hear it in their drum playing, their rock drum playing, and it hasn't really trickled down too much to mainstream rock. You know, it sort of got lost in the mix because they grew up listening to that stuff. So, I mean, it's really cool when you see guys like Ginger Baker, you see their influences, and they're not at all rock and roll. It's big band, you know, and they carried it over, you know, so...
We should note that Ginger Baker is a fucking demon of a drummer.
Yeah, he's when you watch it, you're like, okay, this guy is cut from that jazz cloth, you know?
For sure, yeah. And when you watch him and you put him up against someone who was interviewed in this documentary for no reason, when we looked at this guy turned up on the screen and that guy being Lars Ulrich, we just looked at each other and said, what is Lars doing here?
Oi, yeah, but he did say some funny stuff.
He was a couple of amusing, you know, sort of things at Lars.
He said, like, Cream lasted for 2 years. Sam Kennison said, I have had parties that lasted.
We've had tours that have lasted 2 months longer than Cream ever did. Which is,
Just goes to show, like, it's kind of crazy that bands are so slow to put out albums when you look at bands like Cream or the Beatles that weren't around that long and put out a ton of music.
We've had this discussion before about why bands just take forever and ever and ever to put stuff out. I don't get it. I don't see how a band can go more than 2 years, really. You don't need to go on tour. How long does it take circumvent the fucking globe for a tour?
Well, I mean,
take 3 years.
I mean, I don't know. I think bands are making more money touring now because they don't make money selling albums, so I don't think there's much incentive. But also, like, I don't think bands toured like that back then, did they? Did they do, like, they didn't do massive world tours, right? They would tour the States and maybe Europe and that's it.
Yeah, a lot of bands in the
UK. And that's if they were really big, you know?
A lot of bands in the UK would obviously do, London and the rest of England, and they do also, they finish up to Scotland and they go over to, say, France and Germany and...
Mm-hmm.
And to go to America was a big deal.
When they talk about the Sex Pistols going to America.
Over the pond, yeah.
Anytime you went to America, like, you've arrived, or you had to start over. Like, Genesis talked about going to America and it being like, oh, shit, we have to start over.
Start over again, that's right. And that's the way it was. But now, with the advent of the internet, and anybody in the world can... we've got people over the world listening to us, and we're just sitting in a room, we're in our pyjamas drinking Australian beer and talking about a documentary, but people are listening to us. So that's how... accessible stuff is now, and you find a lot of groups these days, they'll make one or two hit songs, they're already doing a fucking tour. You think, well, okay, you're going to charge me, for instance, prices back home, you're going to charge me $80 to go see an artist who's got 2 songs I know, and I don't know the fucking rest.
Yeah, and that's...
How can you sort of, how can you promote a tour like that? It's, well, you got 2 songs,
Well, I don't know, it's just... I think it's a lot of things. Like, in the festival circuit's huge now. There's so many music festivals that, like, bands can just, like...
I've been to festivals, with a big day out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of ambivalent about them because there's only so much your brain can process in a day.
Right.
So much music you can take. And, you might look at a bill and you might say... hey, great, we've got Motorhead, then we've got Priest, then we've got Iron Maiden, then we've got Kiss. And it's like, okay, all those acts there should be a headlining act.
Mm-hmm.
That should be the one thing, not saying, I've got this. It's like an all-you-can-eat buffet to say, right, I'm going to go straight to the fried chicken. Now I'm going to go to the fucking tacos. And it's like, okay, by the time I've gotten here...
I'm stuffed.
And, oh, there's all this more to come? Okay, great.
Well, and my whole thing with festivals is I hate, usually they're in the summer. And here in Texas, whenever Mayhem Fest rolls around, which I used to go to every year, it was always like 114 degrees, and it was just, I couldn't enjoy myself.
And then you're in that confined crowd.
Yeah. I mean,
it's going to get another 10 degrees hotter.
I mean, I'm enjoying watching Anthrax, but I feel like I'm going to pass out, and I'm chugging water all day, you know?
Yeah.
But, but anyways, back to Mr. Baker.
Yes.
But what was so interesting about this movie, I was kind of like, found his personality fascinating. You see this with a lot of people because he's one of these guys who would, you know, start things and then burn them down and go somewhere else. Like,
yeah.
Kind of funnily, there's a map in the movie they keep going back to. And wherever Ginger Baker's been, there's a giant fire.
Yeah, it's like
and the ship sails to somewhere else. It is like going across the globe, starting a new project, getting into a huge fight and going somewhere else. And I feel like we've known those people who, like, can't maintain relationships and will, like, you know, just piss on you and leave.
Yeah.
Except they're not usually the people we know aren't that talented.
Yeah,
but who do that? But I was just in, you know, he had his drug problems. There's just something about that, like, fire, that personality that has an that's talented but has an appetite for, like, everything from women to drugs to anger. You know?
Our favorite line in the whole thing was his rider request, which was two black hookers and a white limo.
Yes, which sounds weirdly racist.
It's like he's trying to
in a white limo.
It's like he's trying to say, "Well, I'm not entirely, you know, racist. I'm the black and white." You know?
But it was funny though because one thing I didn't know when I watched this movie was, you know, people think about like African fusion in music. They think of Paul Simon. They think of Peter Gabriel.
Yeah,
but Ginger
like
Baker was doing it way before those guys.
Oh, back in 71.
It showed him like with Fela in Africa doing all that stuff and doing what seemed to be pretty dangerous stuff.
And it wasn't like he was bombing at this stuff either. He was completely in tune with what they were at. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, it was just a natural rhythm that he had for that sort of music.
One of my favorite inflammatory things is his daughter said he told his wife he wished he'd had black kids.
Oh boy, yeah, I tell you.
Oh God,
I wish I had black kids. He did end up marrying a black woman.
Yeah, at the end, his miserable looking black wife.
Holy shit. It's just like, she goes, I don't know if this woman speaks very limited English, or if she was just afraid to.
She said one word the whole movie.
Yeah.
She's sitting next to him, and she's a younger black lady.
Yeah.
And she has two kids who are not his, I think. They're
stepchildren. Yeah.
And the documentarian goes, "So is Ginger a good stepfather?"
It was just silence.
And there's just silence for a while.
Yeah.
And they kind of reiterate the question.
Yeah.
You know, it said stepfather, not father. And she's like, Yeah.
Yeah, it's like she had a lot of thinking.
She had to really think about that. But there's several shots of her sitting next to Ginger, and she's just like staring at the ground. I was like, oh, this is the picture of a happy marriage.
Yeah, tell me about it.
You know,
so you gotta wonder how the hell. Like I said, yeah, he probably just clubbed her on the head. Next thing, and she knew he was married to this crazy fucking drama. But, yeah. That was something else. We do learn a lot about him, and we learn a lot about his background. You know, back in England, being born just before the war, World War II had started, and his drug intake was just what would they say he was doing with his cocaine, heroin, and LSD?
Yeah.
At the same time. Like,
yeah,
shit.
That's a lot of, and I'm sure there was booze on top of that.
Oh.
You know,
cognac or champagne, one of those.
But they talked about him like meeting these jazz drummers, and then that jazz drummers were doing heroin.
Yeah.
And Stu was kind of like, you know, why on earth, why, what is it with the jazz drummers and heroin? And I was thinking about it because I was like, that's a good question. I was thinking, you know, I think it's because you're this young drummer, impressionable, and you know, to live that musician lifestyle back then, I think you had to have something of an alcoholic mindset, like that sort of, and what I mean by that is like that sort of danger seeking, like you're, you know, like thrill seeking, because like thrill seeking is often associated with alcoholism,
because
you have to live like a dog, you know, to be a musician, especially back in those days.
Yeah.
Like you'd often get like robbed by club owners and stuff. I was thinking, so, you know, that they're kind of predisposed towards it, but also you go and meet your idols and they're doing heroin and you think, well, he's a fucking awesome drummer, I'm going to do some heroin, you know?
But it's not just limited to drummers. I mean, Charlie Parker was doing heroin, you think?
Yeah. Shit. Well, and it's, I think it's a whole jazz, that jazz culture. Yeah. Like, a lot of them, like, they saw these virtuoso players, and they're doing it, so they're like, I'll do it too, you know? Maybe it makes you a better player. Maybe it helps you come down or something. Well, you know,
draws parallels to the Megadeth Beyond the Music, which you and I know, obviously, I'm pretty sure you would have done.
Which there will be in, 20 years, a documentary just like this about Dave Mustaine.
Dave will be old and crusty with ginger hair as well. Well,
he'll be, like, punching Sam Dunn in the face. Like, telling him, you're not going to fucking talk to Ron McGovney. Yeah. You know?
No drummer was ever as good as Gar was.
Yeah. You're going to talk to Chris Pullen? Well, fuck you. Yeah.
Dave with his cane in.
Hello, me.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, so we see a lot of gingers. And there's some shots. I mean, Ginger's a weird-looking guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, and there's some shots.
Sticks out in the crowd.
He is just like, we were laughing.
He looks like he looks kind of like a not diseased version of Eric Stoltz in Mask.
Oh, God. that's not far from the truth.
If Eric Stoltz's character in Mask, like, didn't have a bone disorder, he'd look like Ginger Baker.
Yeah, he would, yeah.
Like, a slightly less exaggerated bone disorder.
Slightly, not much, yeah. He's got a very odd-shaped face. He's got, but, I mean, if you shut your eyes and you listen to him while you're watching this, mm-hmm. or one of his recordings, he's fucking incredible.
Oh, drum. Yeah. No, the drum stuff you see him doing in this, even the stuff at the end, like now, yeah. still got it, you know? Even yeah. though he's like, he's got emphysema and is still inhaling, like, I don't know what that was. I'm guessing he had emphysema because he was doing oxygen, that oxygen
yeah.
machine.
Yeah.
But he's still playing with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And yeah. it was still awesome. Like, at the end, when he's playing, I was like, yeah, this sounds good, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, most drummers, even though he hasn't taken very good care of himself, he can still play, you know.
But the thing was, in the documentary, he just didn't want to go near the drums.
Yeah.
We just see, there was no shots of him inside his house playing them, other musicians would be just all over. Yeah, I'll plug the guitar in, I'll jump on the kit, but no, he was like, I don't want to play him.
Yeah, he was like, oh, I haven't touched him in a few months, you know.
Yeah, which would, might be exaggerated. Well, no, I'm sure if he hadn't touched him in years, he'd probably say.
Oh, that kit looked like it'd barely been played.
It was pretty brand new looking on that, really. Yeah, but he was also, one thing I didn't know about him, like, I didn't know a lot about him to begin with, but I didn't know he was a big polo fan.
Yeah, like, apparently, weird. Like, one of his business ventures was, like, in L.A., he started a polo club, and they would play polo and then jazz afterwards with his son, Kofi.
Kofi.
Kofi, who was also a drummer.
Always wanted one of the things was in the documentary was he always wanted a boy, then he treated him like shit when he got a boy.
Yeah, they said dad always wanted a boy, and then they treated him terrible.
He treated him terrible as an adult as well.
Yeah, like, I mean,
bloody awful.
Like, the last time he saw him, he said, "You're playing shit. You don't mean shit to me," and that's it. He's like, "That's the last time I saw him."
Yeah, he won't win any Father of the Year awards. Ginger Baker, that's for bloody sure.
I don't think he's going to win much of the year except drummer. You know,
probably that. Yeah, he won't win, like, you know, most stable human being. Or the most
but I love that. One thing that was really gross was that he married he left his wife for his daughter's boyfriend, ex-boyfriend's sister.
Yeah,
who was like 18. 18.
Yeah.
You know, at least he waits till they're legal.
Yeah, Ted. And like, yeah.
Whereas Ted's going, gets adoption papers signed.
Ted's like, couldn't wait another 12 months, y'all.
She put me under her spell. And so, like, but what was so funny was he marries this teenager, and she's like, I'm going to marry this rock star, you know? And then he drags her out to a house with no electricity in Italy.
Yeah.
And she just bolts.
It's just shithole on a mountain
like,
in Italy.
She's like, no thanks.
Yeah, I know, right?
Should have gotten with Clapton.
Yeah. And the even funny one was about his third wife, this woman, Karen, and he goes, I don't want to talk about Karen. They interview her in the show.
They interview her, but he will not. All he says about her was, I don't want to speak of Karen.
That's it. That's, yeah.
Karen!
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, but,
Ray Liotta, Goodfellas, Karen.
Uh-huh, yeah. But, you know, this is just a bit of a mini-sode that we're doing here. This is not a full-length thing. We just wanted to talk about it real quick. Just get our thoughts out about this and just sort of highlight to you guys what we thought of it.
It's kind of a teaser for, think of this as a teaser for Rock Month.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be talking, June is Rock Month at the MMC.
Uh-huh.
So, those of you who aren't a fan of it when we talk about music, you know, listen anyway.
I'd say, listen, because the artists that we've picked out, and we have mapped them all out, like John's told us who he wants, and for those of you unfamiliar, how rock, those new ones, new people who have not been affiliated with Rock Month, what we did last year, what we do is first week I'll pick an artist. We'll follow the same format this year, I guess.
Yeah.
So week one will be me, week two will be you,
yep.
Week three will be John, week four is our collective pick.
Yeah.
And we've got them all lined up, and
I think we've got them all. We just need to run the collective one by John.
I don't think it'll be a problem, though.
No, I think seriously. He'll be like, yeah, sure.
Seriously, that'll be a problem, y'all.
Yeah.
No hints. Yeah. But so this will be a good teaser leading into Rock Month, we said. It's like, you know, just a little sort of whet your appetite show,
right,
for about, you know, 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But we did watch this on Netflix, let's say that much.
Yeah, this is on Netflix. Beware of Mr. Baker.
Yep.
It's very good. I give it, what would you give it, Stu?
Oh, it's got to be an 8 at least.
Yeah, I'd give it about
8.5.
I'd give it an 8.
Yeah, 8.5, around there.
I'd give it an 8, for sure.
It never
solid.
Loses. Like, for myself, I never lost interest with it.
No.
I was like, oh, I wonder what's up to next. Because if you've got little knowledge of the guy, you will be... You will be kept informed and entertained.
I think you'll, you know, I'm not an expert on Ginger Baker, but there's got to be something new for everybody here.
Sure, sure.
Know?
And the thing is, well, because the filmmaker was smart enough to put in his psychotic episode at the start, you're thinking, oh, I wonder if Ginger's going to explode with this question or this one, because he's well known for a fiery temper.
But I just love, like, he'll be like, can you talk a little about this? I just fucking mentioned it. And he's like, we need context, Ginger. He's like, oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, and then he goes, like, they asked him to talk about one of his bandmates. And he's like, I just mentioned him. And he's like, context. Yeah. And he goes, he was a fat man.
Graham was a fat man. Yeah. Talking about Graham Bond. He goes, yeah, because he's saying Graham, the filmmaker goes, Graham who? He goes, I just told you. But no, he doesn't understand it's for the audience.
Yeah.
You know? He's talking about Graham Bond from the 60s. And,
yeah. He was a fat man. That's all the context he was willing to give.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, Netflix is where we saw this. Availability. So it has to be on disc somewhere.
It probably is. If not, it will be. I will say... it makes a good double feature with Whiplash again.
Absolutely,
as I mentioned earlier, it's a good assholes who play drums and are very talented.
Could you imagine Ginger Baker and the J.K. Simmons character together? Oh my god,
they would be
near your teachers.
It would be like him and Jack Bruce and Cream.
Oh yes, there's some good stories in there of their dislike for each other.
Yeah, what Jack Ginger beating the shit out of Jack.
Yeah. You know? Playing bass. He was playing bass alongside Ginger's drum solo. He got punched him in the face. Kept kicking him.
Well, all right. That about wraps up this episode. Good little mini episode for you guys.
Yeah. Go check it out. We can't endorse it enough.
Beware of Mr. Baker on Netflix. Check us out at midnightmoviecowboys.com, MM Cowboys on Twitter.
Yep.
Sorry. And look us up on Facebook, iTunes. Give us a rating, give us a review, helps us out, and we'll catch you guys again soon.
All right.
Adios.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MM Cowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Ah! Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
Fifteen.